In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for another Coolest Conversations throwback in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. This is the Mighty Manfred, and my guest today is Joan Jett, along with her longtime producer, Kenny Laguna. Our conversation originally aired January the 4th, 2019. In it, we speak about the pair's long relationship, how it began and developed. We also talk about her then-recent documentary, Bad Reputation. Her coolest song in the world at the time was Fresh Start, which we also speak about. And I'll play some of that now, followed by your coolest conversations with Joan Jett, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. It's a big day for our Coolest Conversations because joining me is both Joan Jett and her longtime producer and collaborator, Kenny Laguna. How are you both doing today?
Hey, Happy New Year, Mighty Manfred.
Oh, thanks. Happy New Year to you, Joan. Say, look, guys, a fresh start, very first Coolest Song of the Week for 2019 here in the Underground Garage. Great way to kick off the year with a fresh start, right?
You know it. That's what it's all about, you know.
It's a good New Year's title, right?
Yeah, I agree. In fact, first I wanted to ask Joan, did you make any New Year's resolutions that you already know you're not going to keep?
Let's see. Yeah, always to try to do some spring cleaning, clean up my house a little bit. That never happens, because then I go on the road, and then my house just gets filled up with more stuff. So, and to work out a little bit. Both of those I won't do.
Well, all right. You know, you do a lot of travel and stuff. You're moving around on stage and stuff, so you're getting some exercise.
Yeah.
How about yourself, Kenny?
Well, my big one is exercise. I exercised my whole life, and then I kind of wrecked my knee a little bit and took off a month and decided I really like not exercising. But it's catching up with me. You know, Manfred, we're leaving in 3 days for Australia. We have a 5-week tour of Australia. So we're just packing and freaking out because if you get something.
That's a long trip. That's a long trip in the airplane. You're going to have to work that knee out, keep it moving around. You're going to have to get up and move around the airplane.
You're damn right.
So the new song, part of the soundtrack to the documentary Bad Reputation, Joan, you wrote the song with Dougie Needles, is that right?
Yes. He's our guitar player.
Right, and he's been in the Black Hearts since when? A long while, right?
A long while, yes. I'd say 98, I believe. So it's over 20. It's 20 years. I think this is his 20-year anniversary this year, earlier in the year.
Did that song start off with a lyric idea from yourself, or was there a riff that either of you came up with? How did you, what was the genesis of A Fresh Start?
Well, you know, I've been doing this a long time, you know, and to me, rock and roll was always sort of a, you know, what you did as sort of a younger person. This is going to sound weird, but, you know, as you grow older, it's like, what is rock and roll? Am I saying this right?
I think you are saying it right. Because that is, you know, it's somehow, it's this whole thing of it's a young man's game, or excuse me, young woman's game, young person's game, let's say. And then as he gets older, it's different because it's the connotation is with this youth and sort of eternal youth.
Yeah, so what does rock and roll represent in that context? And what do you write about that still is genuine and authentic, but you're not kind of cramming... I don't know. It's sort of, I can't really figure out how to describe it, but I know it when I see it.
You know, I predate Joan and you, Manford. And when I got in the late 60s into my career, it was totally accepted that your career couldn't go past 30 years old. And now it's some of the best bands, the ones that we love the most, they're over 70 years old. So it's an interesting evolution.
Yeah. How do you keep writing important, hopefully important music that still represents both sort of can touch on youth culture, but also be representative of where you are now in life? You know what I mean? And sometimes that just entails getting a fresh perspective.
I think one thing that people fail to think about is like when Robert Johnson was writing, was doing blues music, he was a really young man. And there wasn't, you know, we have this perception of blues being, you know, older black guys playing music, but that was not the case when they were starting out. This was young people's music.
Right.
And similarly with all four forms of jazz, it was, you know, young people's music. And I think with these bands like Rolling Stones and et cetera carrying this, what they're doing on in the 70s, I think that helps change that perspective, because the music itself, certainly with rock and roll, there's more of an emphasis. You know, they were trying to market it to young kids, and there was sort of the youth culture born out of that. But still, you know, the greatest music is I think timeless. So I agree with you, trying to generate, you know, fresh ideas after a certain period of time. But it's, I mean, what do I write about now is, you know, my I have a teenage daughter, and it's like back to Lieber and Stoller. I mean, it's like her eye rolling back and forth when I ask her to do something, you know. I mean, it's just, it's just incorporating those experiences that you're having now and using, you know, your art to express those things, because still you as a person are having experiences and have a message and a story to tell and share.
Right. No, I agree with you 1,000%, but you know, sometimes when you're, you know, something's new to you and it's like you're unsure of your own, whether you can do it or not. And that's the challenge. And that's the thing that, you know, keeps you up at night, but also makes you want to do it. So how to keep staying in touch with people, both my age and young kids, you know. But they're all out there, and they're all rock and roll fans, so it should work, you know. It's just new for me.
Well, I love the songs. Well, I love songs in general. They got yeah, yeahs in them. So you got that in Fresh Start. Plus, you know, I think overall very positive message, trying to pull ourselves together, get out of our collective ruts. And in the song, you got that lyric, sometime I feel like I've been here before. It's like the past knocking on my door. Now, the documentary is about the past, where you came from, how you got to this point to now. Making the documentary about your career, has that enabled you to make a fresh start since?
That sounds good.
it is. It presents you with a double challenge, because you're looking at your own history and stacking yourself up against that, you know? So it can be sort of intimidating on one level, because I didn't know earlier that I wasn't supposed to succeed. I just plowed ahead, you know. Sometimes the benefit of youth is you don't know when to stop, you know, and you just fight forward. But now, you know, sometimes you know too much when you're older, and so fears that you might not have had when you were younger sort of trickle in.
Well, a couple of years ago, there was that Runaways biopic with Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning. Did its success encourage you to make the documentary, or had you already kind of started on that already?
You know, I don't know if they had started filming the documentary. I don't think, maybe it was, we were just starting, but the documentary started out sort of, we were doing some recording of some shows. I think we might have been trying to do a video for a song or something, and we just started recording some live shows. Mm-hmm. And this was actually the brainchild of Carrie Ann Brinkman, who's Kenny's daughter. Wow. And runs our organization, runs Black Heart Records and stuff. She came in probably 10, 15 years ago and kind of gave us a kick in the ass to get the company kind of moving in the right direction. And so this was kind of her idea, because she, when I met Carrie, she was 3 months old, and I moved into Kenny's and his wife Merrill's house. So she grew up in a very strange sort of family life, and was on the road when she was a young girl, and you know, then went to kindergarten when her school started. But she had a very different upbringing and tried to explain it to people all her life and wasn't really able to. So she was looking for an outlet to try to explain it. And so it wound up being this documentary thing, and she just ran with it. Kenny and I really had no involvement at all, which is good, because, you know, we didn't want to change what it was. And I thought it came out really interesting.
Are there things about your career that you feel people didn't get straight that you've been able to explain with a movie?
I'm not so sure about that aspect of it, but I just think what I've been hearing from people is that they've learned a lot that they didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, there's the press really just takes your main story and doesn't go into any details, at least with me. So I think for a lot of people, they learned a lot more than, you know, she was in a band called The Runaways, and she had a hit called I Love Rock and Roll, and that's it, you know? So they learned a lot more.
Well, the film was shown at Sundance and some other film fests. I know it has won some awards. What's the best way to see it now? I mean, I think you can stream it, right?
You can stream it, yeah. I believe it's on all platforms.
And I believe that the DVD just came out.
That's well, all right. People should. If people have any, if they have any leftover Christmas money, they need to get to need to be ordering that.
And it's on Hulu, whatever that is. So,
oh, Hulu, that has something to do with the interwebs. The Hulu. So, Kenny. Well, I guess Joan mentioned this, but you're married to Merrill, and you guys are like high school sweethearts, right?
That's true.
Wow.
That's good intel that you have. Yeah.
Well, so you were having this successful music business career prior to meeting Joan, played on all these hit records, top 40 records through the course of the 60s. You're producing, you've done some stuff in England. What was it about Joan that got you on board, and then also got Merrill on board, because both you guys committed to backing Joan 100%. I mean, she just mentioned Joan was living in y'all's house there, because you could have gone a path of least resistance. I mean, your career's on top. Why go in all in with Joan? What did you see there? What did you hear there that you knew this was the path to take?
Well, she had a manager. When I was working, I worked for the Who's label, and I had hits with bands like the Steve Gibbons bands, which is, they had hits in England more than here. But her manager was also a publicist, mm-hmm. and he was doing stuff for the Steve Gibbons band, and he kept telling me, you got to work with Joan, you got to work with the Runaways, and for one reason or another, I kept blowing it off. They were in Amsterdam, and I was supposed to interview for that to do what turned out to be their last album. And I went down to the hotel lobby, and I ran into Matthew King Kaufman of Berserkly Records, and he goes, why would you want to go to Amsterdam and audition when you can come with me and you could do Greg Kinn and Jonathan Richmond, and you got the job, and it's summertime, which is what really iced it for me. And so I didn't go. And then I heard again from the manager, Toby Mamus, and he said that the Runaways had broken up. They had a commitment to a movie company, and they needed someone who could, like, get six finished songs done in about 8 days. And again, I was going to not do it, I'm in England and Joan's in California. But Meryl said to me, listen, I've been reading about her. I look at her in the British tabloids, in the British rock magazines, and she just pops right out. And she goes, I think she's significant. You should go meet her. And when I went there, we went to the Riot House, which whatever it is today, it used to be a Hyatt House on Sunset Strip. And she walked in and she looked like something like a fantasy. Here's this rock and roll girl, comes in with a black leather jacket and whatever the accoutrements were hanging on, you know, safety pins and razor blades, whatever it was. And I was going, wow, look at this. This is something different. And then we started working together. And to tell you the truth, one of my best friends from when I was 16 is Darlene Love. And I know she's a friend of the Underground Garage. And Joan reminded me of Darlene, where, like, when she sang, she let it hang out, which a lot of women were contained, especially in those days. And she also, she didn't really have, it was a rock and roll purity, like Darlene. Like, you didn't know if it was for a 16-year-old or a 30-year-old. You didn't know if it was R&B or just pure rock and roll. I mean, it just hung out there, and unabashed rock music. And I said to her, let me help you get a record deal. I had no idea there was going to be resistance, because Joan was doing something that was reserved for the guys.
Yeah.
Leading a band, playing the electric guitar, writing her own song. So Meryl and I then went and saw Joan play in Holland, and Meryl said, she's a star. This girl's a star. And one thing led to another. I thought I would do like one album as a producer and maybe like send her on her way. But it got so involved, we couldn't get a record deal. We ended up printing up our own records, selling them out of the back of my Cadillac. And today, 40 years later, we have Blackheart Records.
You know, you mentioned 40 years. Relationships of any sort are difficult to manage over time. Do you guys ever find yourselves bickering like an old married couple? I mean, ever finish each other's sentences?
Every day. like all day, every day.
You know, Joan, you've always displayed a drive that, you know, despite the obstacles, you weren't going to stop striving. You've mentioned that, talked about that already even. Is that a quality that was present in one of your parents or both of your parents? Is that something that, you know?
Well, you know, I wonder about that. I mean, my parents are both gone now, so, you know, I can't pepper them with questions like I would now if I could. My father was an insurance salesman, so I'm not sure how driven you can be in that, but we moved around a lot, so he got transferred a lot. I don't know if that was from drive or if that was for some other reason. And my mother, I sometimes think that she's a lot like me, if she had had the freedom that I've had, because she was so supportive when I wanted to play guitar, when I wanted to be in a rock and roll band. She helped me go to Hollywood. She took me there and would pick me up. And, you know, she just really was very supportive and believed in me. And so it just makes me think that she would have been a driven person had she lived in a different time. And I think, you know, she had committed to being a mother and put herself fully into that. So she worked after we grew up and stuff. She had other jobs and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, she could have sat on her butt. So I think that's drive to some degree, but not in the same way as what I'm doing. But I believe that, yes, the attention to detail, attention to certain doing what you say you're going to do and doing it to the best of your ability and all those sort of things, being kind to people. I think all those things are just as important as drive, and they instilled all those qualities in me.
So I had heard that, I've heard a couple of different places, either your father or your parents together had given you a guitar when you were like 13. Is that right? 13?
Yes. They got it for Christmas.
And so this was really great to hear that your mom was so supportive, because I was curious as to whether when you said, you know, hey, I want to be in a band, whether your parents had completely freaked out. So was it that a harder sale to get your dad on board with that?
I don't think so. I think they just figured it would be a phase, so they were going to humor me. And because there were a lot of things I wanted to be when I was a kid, and it just so happened that the timing worked out to play rock and roll. Otherwise, who knows? I mean, I wanted to be an archaeologist, an astronaut. Science really interests me. I mean, there's so many things that interest me beyond music and art. I guess in a way I could be a geek, you know? But so it so happens the timing just worked that I settled on that. But my mother and my father both got me this guitar, but my dad didn't really pay attention, you know, to what I was doing, whether I was playing the guitar or not. Neither one of them made sure I took lessons or anything like that. They just let me do what I want with it. And I probably, you know, played it a lot initially and then kind of put it down and picked it up again once my family moved to California. This all happened when I lived back east. So once my family moved to California, I thought, wow, I could really do this now, because there's got to be other girls in Los Angeles area that want to play rock and roll, that play some kind of instrument. I can't be the only one. So it kind of reignited the actual thought I could do this. But like, well, yeah, my dad, he would yell at me when I was listening to Led Zeppelin. What are you listening to? So, you know, I don't think he really got it.
He sounds like a typical father from the era.
Her father was a classical freak.
Oh, okay. Well,
my parents were too. And, you know, it took them a while to realize that the popular music of today is the classical music of tomorrow, we hope. I mean, Mozart was doing what the Stones were doing, only in a different era.
Right. Well, I want to play Bad Reputation, as it's the title song to the film. But I was wondering about the song. Where does it fit in the Jet Laguna timeline? Is that one of the first songs you guys worked on together? Or how much did you have of that, Joan, before Kenny and others contributed?
I don't think I had anything except, you know, maybe the title, which was said in conversation, just describe, you know, talking about my life, and we sort of mined my life for subject matter. As I was talking to Kenny and venting about this or that, these ideas would come out, and Bad Reputation was definitely very early on. It wasn't the first, because the first one we did was a song called You Don't Know What You Got, but it probably was in that first 10 or so songs you wrote.
Well, it was the last song we wrote for the Bad Reputation album, which was originally called Joan Jett. When we released it in Europe, it was Joan Jett. And that was the last song. It almost didn't make the record, because none of the people we were working with thought that much of the song. And then...
except us.
And then WNEW made it the breakout record of the week on an indie label, so... and it grew from there. It's a gold digital record. If you told us that in 1979, we wouldn't have believed you.
No, but you know, that was in the days when, you know, fans could actually make a difference in what the playlists were that the radio stations played. You know, where if you got a lot of requests for songs, they'd actually play them. So because the fans requested a lot of our early material, like in the three-state area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut sort of area, we did really well.
I was going to ask if that was a fan favorite at the live gigs at the time as well. So you were getting feedback like, hey, this is the song, you know.
We were very lucky that certain songs that we did early on were on the radio. The phones would light up. For the fans who don't know what that means, is, you know, the telephones, all the different lines. If the record was a hot record, all of a sudden you'd see those hold buttons pumping. And we were very lucky that that happened. And we were lucky that what they used to call AOR radio, which is similar to what you're doing, Manford, you know, the AOR radio, the jocks had some autonomy, and they gave Joan a chance, because the industry did not give us a chance, but we had that help. And, you know, aside from the tri-state area here, we had Boston, FNX, BCN, we had K-Rock in Los Angeles, KNAC in Long Beach, I think. And those stations introduced Joan as a solo artist, and thankfully, the records worked.
And are still working. I mean, back to Fresh Start, you know?
Right. Fingers crossed. I listen to Fresh Start, and I say, wow, maybe we can have a hit at this point. But
it goes over well live, and that's before it was even on a record, before it was even released. You know, we like to play things live first to just get them ready to be recorded so we can record them live, and they feel better to me. But also, you get a chance to see how the fans respond to a song they have nothing but the song and no history and no idea what it is. So we got a great response live, so that sort of gave us, you know, a feel that the song didn't just feel good to us. Hopefully, a lot of people will like it. So, thank you.
Well, yeah,
for
man.
The song of the week.
Both of you. Well, Joan, Kenny, thank you both so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
And thank you for all the support, and thank Lil Steven and the rest of the gang out there on the Underground Garage. I mean, you guys, best radio station. Best.
Thanks so much, man.
Well, you know, I got to play this record now. Here's Bad Reputation, the debut single, title track to the album, title song to Joan Jett's documentary and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.